Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
And Sean, today we are a little off schedule. This is a Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And it's not even 4 o'clock. It's I'm sure it's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's 2 o'clock our time because you're on the East Coast today. Normally you're on Central. Today you're on the East Coast. It is 2 o'clock, but we are still going to have a beverage. That's what's great about not working in somebody else's like office building and, you know, having to go into a 9-to-5 job. You can have a beer whenever you want to.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to on my walk this morning. I'm up in my in-laws. They're moving. They sold their family farm and they're moving into a little community. But so I was walking around here. I was listening to an old Brian Tracy. I was going to say tape because that's what it was when he made it. But it's on Audible has all these old classics that you used to pay like $200 and $300 for the tape set are now free on Audible.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So instead of my University on Wheels, I'm doing my University on my walks. And he was talking about, you know, how you're your own corporation.
Yes.
Which is one of his big things.
And absolutely.
So my corporation allows for a beer at 2 p.m. on a Thursday. That's right.
Absolutely. No restrictions there. What's not frowned upon. Let's check with our own HR. Yep, that's good.
No mandates here.
No mandates.
Except that the only mandate is you must have a beer at some point during the week, I guess.
That's right. That's right.
No, it's your choice. We're not going to mandate it. It's your choice.
Well, it's healthy, right?
Yeah.
What is the quote that we have on our website? Beer, if drunk in moderation, softens the temper, cheers the spirit, and promotes health.
There you go.
So,
I mean, what else? And it's funny because some of the ads that we're going to talk about today, that's most of what they talk about.
Yep.
Like I was looking through them and this kind of reignites my passion around this idea of people are over niching and they're getting too niched.
Yeah.
I know these are old ads that we'll talk about today.
Yeah.
But they were also really successful.
Absolutely.
And I think they would still work. Like when you hear them and see them, like you're like, those would still work.
Yep.
I mean, you might need to modify some stuff, but.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, there's a reason the big niches are still the big niches.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's, what was that? There's a recent book that it's been last year that I read through. I think it's one that you may have recommended, but it's called Range. You know, why?
I don't remember that one.
Maybe Range, about not focusing on niches, but being broad. You know, why, you know, because every, you know, we've been preached to for the last 10 years or so, probably longer than that, that we need to get really specific and really tackle a corner or a niche market. And
like niche inception, right? A niche within a niche within a niche.
Yeah. Yeah, so tight that you're basically, what's it, you know, in Hollywood, they call it, you're basically typecast or you're, you know, where you can't ever, you can't ever do anything else, you know. You're in that role forever, unfortunately. I think about who's the guy that played Batman from the 60s, Adam West. I don't remember anything else. I don't think he ever got a job after that.
That's tough.
He made money at Comic-Con, I guess, signing autographs.
he was at a Dan Kennedy event I went to. Worst speaker I've ever heard.
So, I remember you said that.
It was awful. Absolutely awful. I bet a third of the room walked out during that thing.
Oh, wow. I wonder, was he drinking some libations beforehand?
He might have been. He was in a room full of direct marketers and, you know, basically people who know copy and direct marketing, and all he did was talk about himself.
Sounds like Adam West.
He missed the "what's in it for me" speech at the beginning of the show, I guess. But anyway, I'm excited about my beer kind of today.
Oh, good. Good. So it's a free for all today. No guests. We're going to do our random flight. Sean's got a great beer. I've got a so-so beer. And, but we're going to be talking, it's funny we brought up Adam West, cause we're going to be talking about, comics and Stan Lee for all you Marvel fans out there. And one of his secrets to persuasion in writing. So there's your little tease. Plus, we'll be covering some copy ads, some classics in that, and using some examples. And so we'll just cover a few different topics here on today's episode.
Yeah, but, if you're watching on the YouTubes or you watch this back later, like, I feel like Ricky Bobby, except instead of I don't know what to do with my hands, I don't know what to do with my eyes today because I'm on the iPad because I'm on the road and the camera's down here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see you looking. Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, there's
still, what, it's not seconds? That noticeable. It's not too noticeable.
Yeah, I had to raise it up a little bit, but it's funny. Like, there's only, 6 inches between those two dots.
Yep.
And the difference in how your head is feels like night and day. So anyway,
so how are you miking off of that? I'm just curious for anybody that wants to know. So you got your iPad. What are you using for a microphone?
So I'm actually using.
Oh, cool. So you got it tied in.
Yeah, I found this. I have to post it maybe, but I found this adapter for the iPad that you just plug in, and you could actually plug the mic directly into that as well if you wanted, but it has a USB.
Right.
And since this mic has the, you know, has the headphone in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It's easy to, the table's too low. So the mic's further away than usual.
Right.
So it probably doesn't sound quite as good, but
right.
I could just hold it.
Yeah. I always forget that's a great mic because it's an XLR and a USB mic. So
yeah, I could just hold it like this.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. There you go. Now you got the radio sound.
I got the radio voice. Let's do this. Why not?
All right. So you just teased. You got a great beer. So let's get into. I'm curious. You got my curiosity piqued. Is it something regional? Because you're in Pennsylvania.
Well, okay. So being a little sarcastic. So here's what we flew in. We don't have a car.
Right.
You know, we got picked up. So my sister-in-law was out running around. I was like, hey, can you grab me a beer while I'm out, while you're out?
Oh,
I
no.
can't go anywhere. She's like, yeah, I'll FaceTime you when you get to the local. They have these chains up here called Sheets, which is like a 7-Eleven.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them.
And so, I mean, that was our best hope because, like, this town we're in has nothing. Like, it's nothing. And now if you want, like, sticky buns or
whoopie
pies.
That's
or
right.
Pastries and
little Debbie's
things, those are everywhere. Like homemade bakery items, everywhere. Beer, not so much, or not craft beers anyway. So she was going through the thing, and I was like, yeah, just give me that. Because it was either Bud Light or this. I mean,
And
it was one of those. They had a beer cave, but it was like all the big regular stuff and seltzers.
Yeah.
So here's what I ended up with. The can looked cool. So we went with a cool can. It is.
Oh, wow.
Raging Eagle.
Mango.
It's a Yingling.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And here's this is the copy for the, you know, our craft brews usually have some you know, pretty good copies, you know, sometimes. So here's the copy. In fact, it's one line. I can put it on the screen. Beer with natural mango flavor.
Wow. Interesting. That's the copy. That's a solid. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty specific, right to the point. It tells you what's.
Yeah. And it's 6% ABV. So I don't know. I assume this is like a Yingling lager with mango in it. So that's where we're at.
I am really surprised that you found that at a Sheetz.
Yeah. And it's the 24 ounce can. So it's the, you know, it's the to-go can.
So that was the single local. Out of the single. Shelf on the cooler. Okay.
Because there's nothing there I wanted a six pack of. And my in-laws don't drink, so I wasn't going to leave it here for them.
Ah, I see.
Know? So, you know, so that's my story. I can smell the mango.
Wow. So it's going to be a disappointing, brew tasting today. I can sense. I've got one. It's an Imperial IPA. I didn't have a chance to pick up any beer today or this week because we're both traveling this week. I flew out to Salt Lake City, Utah for a trade show Monday and just got in late last night. So no chance to go to the establishment, but I did have some leftover 420 Imperial IPA. Oh, wow. Look at that. It got a head on it.
Yeah.
This is by Sweetwater, Sweetwater Brewing Company, 420 Imperial IPA, 9.1%, ABV.
Does that have CBD or THC in it? 420?
I wish. it says so this one cop, you know, talking about copy, it says, drink them if you got them. A classic, a craft classic deserves Imperial treatment. A fresh take on ingredients from the original 420. This bold flavored packed new brother features a fresh combo of hops for added intensity and complexity, creating flavors and aromas of mango, peach, pineapple, citrus, and pine. And pine. Kind of like the pine salt.
Oh. That pine kills it every time. What is it with the IPA? The pea should just go ahead and, instead of pale, it should be pine.
It should be. It should be. And I've had this one. So this is basically leftover from a six-pack I picked up for a gathering at our place a couple of weeks ago. And not so much for me, but for some of the other guests. And this one, I looked in the fridge. I said, man, surely there's a beer in there somewhere. This is the only thing left in the back of the fridge was this 420. So okay. Guess what? I'm going to be having it. However, get this. It's, take a guess. Okay. So I said pine, take a guess what the IBU rating is.
55.
You're close. 60.
Oh, wow. That's pretty.
60 IBUs.
It's pretty bitter.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a lager, so there are no IBU ratings.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, well, cheers.
Cheers.
So, camera's down here.
Yeah. There we go.
Wow, I'm surprised.
Really?
This is actually pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah.
So is the mango pretty, I mean, does that hit you? Is it pretty strong or?
No, actually it's not. Like, you can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of interesting. It almost like smooths the lager out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you could pound this thing. Like, it is very smooth.
Very smooth. Okay.
Yeah. Like, that's shockingly good.
Hold the can up again one more time. Let's see that, let's see that label.
The Raging Eagle.
That's cool. I like that.
Mango.
I like that. The orange and yellow.
It looks like a high school football team or something.
Yeah, it
or
does. College. It looks like a mascot.
What's the division that we played last week? Whatever division of football, the All-American Conference or whatever it's called. Conference USA.
UAB. Conference USA. Yeah, Conference USA. Exactly.
That's what that looks like. That looks like a Conference USA.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, but no, it's actually really good. I'm going to give this a solid 3.9.
Ooh. That's good. 3.9. Okay.
Yeah.
On this one, I'm going to go about a 2.5. Just too citrusy and piney. Pine solly. You know, 60 IBUs, though, that's way too much. That's double. That's even double my limit. So that's
way too much. You know, like, what IPAs remind me of, because there's so much pine in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going to Florida, like to the panhandle of Florida, and staying 3 miles inland instead of going to the beach.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, because there's all the pine trees. Mm-hmm. And you get none of the good stuff about the beach.
Yep.
And all of the nasty stuff.
Yep.
That's what an IPA is to beer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's my metaphor for IPA. So.
And I feel like, you know, for all you IPA listeners out there.
They're long gone.
They're long gone. We have offended a lot of people, and that's okay. Because that's our opinion.
Yeah, instead of mask or no mask, vaccine, no vaccine. We're like no IPA.
No IPA. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So we're not going to mandate that you can't have or you should have stouts or whatever. Mm-hmm. Your choice. You can be wrong.
Yeah.
We're cool with you being wrong.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to get into that because we're all vulnerable, and even IPAs, you know, that's obviously a genetic flaw and a human frailty on some level. So, you know, we're all capable of that.
Yeah. So tell me more. You told me we're going to talk about Stan Lee and you know, by the way, have you seen the last Marvel movie that just came out 2 weeks ago? Did you see it yet?
Not yet. No. It's the, I forgot the character. It's,
that's a problem. But it's the Ten Rings. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not too into, my Marvel doesn't go that deep that I know this character. So,
I don't think it did very well because I haven't heard much about it since the opening weekend. So,
yeah. Yeah, they can go. I mean, they're really expanding the universe all of these characters, like the I forgot this other group. Not the they're supposed to be like a group like the Avengers, but they're the they're from another galaxy or something like that that's coming out. Oh. You know, the I forgot the name. I'll think of it in a minute. But like all of these new characters, you know, some of them I don't go that deep in the, you know, I was like surface deep in Marvel comics back in the day.
Right.
And, you know, some of these people are like, I didn't know he was part of the Marvel universe, you know? Yeah. So it's pretty cool though. I mean, it just goes to show, like, we'll get in, and part of what we'll get in today, just the creative genius of Stan Lee. When he first started developing these characters, I mean, he didn't do them all. He's not the originator of every one of these characters, but a lot of the base characters to begin with, the Hulk, Spider-Man, Thor, Captain America, mm-hmm. they all came from his, you know, his creativity. So
let's talk about Stan Lee, because I think I know where, you know, kind of where you're going, but go ahead and jump in. And I think what we're going to talk about today, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the difference between why Marvel has become so successful in DC.
Absolutely. Yep.
Like this, and spot DC on. Has started to do it, but mm-hmm. now Stan Lee perfected it.
Yeah. But DC started too late. You know, they're kind of they're catching up, and that's a big story. So I'll start out with, I wanted to pick up some easy reading material for the flight, last night. So I jumped on, I was out in Salt Lake City for a couple of days at a trade show. Went out there Monday, so I wanted something. You know, I didn't want to watch. I didn't feel like watching a movie, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to pick up something at the newsstand just to kind of read for a couple hours on the plane. So I actually found this. This is pretty cool. It's by Entertainment, and you know how they put out all these specialty magazines. You know, Time and Entertainment and People, they put out these, you know, specialty, which is a look like a biography of someone,
which is, you know, is its own little brilliant piece of
it
marketing
is.
Because these things are like, how much was that one? $17.95 or
$13.99, yeah. $14. So I paid the, yeah, I mean, so this is what you would pay for like a paperback book or a year subscription. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're doing magazines. They're selling mm-hmm. one-off magazines for what they used to sell subscriptions for.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant.
But the title is Stan Lee. Obviously, it's commemorating the life of Stan Lee. You know, he passed away back in 2018. And it's really cool. So I almost read this thing from cover to cover on the plane. I skipped over a few sections because I love the way they break it down. They kind of sexualize. It's not like a start to finish. So you can kind of skip to certain sections. But what was fascinating to me is like when he first got started, he was almost burnt out. You know, he almost wanted to quit writing comics because he started at a young age. He got into it. It was kind of just a way to find work. And so he was doing it, but he really wasn't enjoying it at all. And he didn't have a license to, they didn't give him in the original comics because there were certain guidelines on, you know, how you could present comics, because there was actually a law, you know, there was a law back in the I think it was like the 30s or something, that you couldn't get too, you know, graphic, and you had to maintain moral decency in a lot of these comics. And so all of the comics were geared towards the protagonist, the hero of, you know, all of these were like these perfect, straight-laced characters, and they had really no, there was no in-depth character development on these characters. They were just all perfect. They had their superpowers.
Yeah, the original Superman, like, you know, truth, honor, and justice with... Yeah,
which is great. I mean, it's great, because I actually love, I always love the Superman movies, but if you follow that pattern all of the time, you start to like get a little tired. You know, it works for a while, but you start to, you know, we were like we were talking about last week on last week's episode, you know, how we're all, you know, fallible creatures, right? We're all fallible human beings. And we, when we're hit with people that don't reflect us on a regular basis, we're kind of like, it kind of turns us off, because it's like, wait a minute, I can't relate to that guy, because he's always doing everything right, and that never happens.
Right, and same is true for companies.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly.
So if the company's perfect, then we start to be like, maybe this is not the company for me.
Absolutely, yep, exactly. So, you know, so things loosened up in the, started loosening up in the 50s, I think, where the restrictions were dialed back on what you could do. And around that time, right before that, you know, Stan Lee was thinking about just retiring, getting out of the comics industry. And his wife actually, she actually persuaded him to stay in it and said, listen, you know, you have an opportunity now, to, you know, create the characters that you've always wanted to create, because that was his thing. He wanted to write characters that were, had problems, right? That were reflective of everyday life. They were superheroes, but they were also heroes that, that we could relate to as human beings. His readers could relate to as human beings. And so he decided to give it another shot. And he started coming up with these characters on the second go. Unlike Captain America, that was one of his early creations. You know, everybody thinks Captain America is a straight-laced guy. Then he, you know, that was one of the original straight-laced characters that he did. But on the second time around, he decided to start creating characters like that really had problems. And that's where he originated, you know, that's where the origination of, you know, the Hulk, like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character who had problems. You know, on one side, he was a, you know, he was trying to fight this other side of his personality that was part of this monster, you know, and it was a back and forth dichotomy. And, you know, he was a character that also, you know, did good, but at the same time, he was uncontrollable, right? His rage was uncontrollable. Right. And Spider-Man, you know, a teenager of all things, which it was funny, because in this book or in this magazine, it says, you know, the people, when he came to his publishers about the idea at Marvel about a teenager who had issues that was a superhero called Spider-Man, they laughed at him, because they said, first of all, teenagers are not main characters. Teenagers are sidekicks. Okay. Let's get it right. You know, Robin, you know, so no teenager can be the center stage of your story. It's always a sidekick. And he's like, whatever. But he went ahead, you know, obviously went ahead with it. The second thing, they're like, Spider-Man, what, a spider as a hero? Are you kidding me? That's so stupid, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, he was way ahead of the game. He bucked the trend, and I've got an excerpt in here.
And now Spider-Man, especially, you know, with Tom Holland, I think, in the role, I think he's probably one of the best.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
Like,
to me,
loves Spider-Man. Like,
yeah,
that character, like the kid, the teen group loves that character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's relatable. He actually looks, I think, unlike some of the other previous, like from the two movies, the Andrew Garfield and the Tobey Maguire, I really feel like the Tom Holland, he's probably the most realistic Peter Parker of the three.
Yeah, he's got that quirkiness about him.
He does. You know? Yep.
Which is very relatable, like what we're talking about. Like,
smaller kid, you know, he kind of fits the bill of what you think of Peter Parker, kind of a geeky, smaller kid who, you know, always, you know, fit that persona of who Peter Parker was, you know, in all the comics. So,
yeah.
So he says, here's the interesting thing. He says, and this goes back to persuasion in writing, because I want to tie this into a book that I've been going through recently. And we've touched, I think we've actually touched on this book. And it's called Sell with Story, a guy named Paul Smith. He's got a section on there called, in the book, called The Relatable Hero. And he says, the most compelling hero for your story is someone your audience can identify with. That means they can either imagine themselves in the same position or working with that person. In other words, a customer, a supplier, a boss, a subordinate, or even a competitor. And it says the more similar the hero in the story is to the audience, the more relevant the story will be to them, and more likely they'll listen to the story. So, and tie that in with one of the things that Stan Lee said in this magazine. He says, because I highlighted this, he says the most important thing is to make the reader care, sympathize with a character. Lee said the more problems a character has, the more unhappy and trouble he is, it makes that person seem human to the readers. And that's what people, I think that's what's attractive in any story, any persuasive, you know, any, even, you know, in copywriting, with whether we're writing a story, whether it's in sales copy, is to incorporate and have your customers or your readers identify with the character of the person that you're writing about, so they're not too up here, right?
Right, because you want them to see themselves as the hero.
Absolutely.
Of your product or your story, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and then your product is the, or your company is the mentor, the wise one.
Right.
You know, the gadget.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whatever it is, but it's the hero. So, you know, they could be, and we're jumping universes here, but you know, if they were Batman, then your product might be Batman's belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Or his car, Batmobile, yeah. Or whatever, mm-hmm. Right? You know, you think of car advertising, you're trying to get people to see themselves as Batman driving the Batmobile.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, not whatever else. Like, mm-hmm. So yeah. So it's interesting what you say though about Captain America, because I think they did a good job of that juxtaposition of the 50s character versus
sure
the modern day,
right, exactly,
in the Avengers series, when mm-hmm. you know, after he comes back and gets unfrozen and all that,
right,
you know, you can really start to see the difference. And you know, they're like, he's the Boy Scout, you know, all that stuff. And then you got Tony Stark, who's all kinds of messed up, you know, you got,
right,
you know, Thor. And yep. So yeah, it's interesting to, you know, and even Black Widow, you know, I mean, she's formerly a bad person, mm-hmm. comes over to the good side.
Yeah.
Like, they all have these checkered pasts.
Right. Absolutely.
That doesn't mean you need to go out and have a checkered business past.
No,
you
know, no.
To make this work.
Well, it relates to like one of the, just to tie it into this trade show I was at, they had a keynote speaker on Tuesday, and he was a very good speaker. I mean, he got a rounding applause after his keynote, but he was a great storyteller. But he tied in a lot of his failures in business, one right after another. And I mean, we've talked about this, you know, being, being open about, you know, some of your failures. But he talked about one specific example, you know, when back in the day when he started his first manufacturing plant in South Carolina, he bought business, you know, he bought a new building, bought new equipment, set everything up. Everything was nice and shiny. But he's like, I walked in the plant and looked around and realized I don't have any employees. Like, he was like pulling the cart before before the horse, so to speak. And he's like, yeah. I seriously made a mistake there. That was the dumbest mistake. Because I was like, you know, I was like putting everything in place and I didn't even have one person to start with. And,
probably no sales either.
Yeah. No sales whatsoever. So I was like spending all this money. Yeah. He was ready.
He was ready.
But he was just telling one story after another that was just dumb mistake after another. He's like, I've made every dumb mistake in the book, and I'm not here to talk about how great I am. I'm here to share the experience and share the lessons that I've learned along the way, because I've made every dumb mistake in the book, you know, to get where I am. So,
yeah. And I think there is a comfort that we get in that when we hear mm-hmm. people or companies that kind of talk about that journey.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, we realize, okay, they get me. They understand where I've been.
Right. Right.
Or where I am. Mm-hmm. And they figured out the other side.
Absolutely. Yep.
Cause you know, if you come off too polished,
yeah,
then there's a tendency for people to think, well, of course they could do it.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't have any problems.
Absolutely.
They didn't have to go through what I'm going through right now. So of course they could do it.
Yeah.
Right. It works for them.
Right.
But yeah, if you can show that you've been through those same issues mm-hmm. or even something similar mm-hmm. and that this was the solution, whatever your product or service is,
yeah,
then it becomes a lot, just a whole lot more.
Yes.
Empathetic, believable, a lot mm-hmm. of things.
Right. Yeah. And just to sum up the Stan Lee, story that we're just talking about, once he started developing these, flawed characters in his stories, mm-hmm. Marvel sales surpassed, they went far above, because at the time, before he started creating these flawed characters, DC was the supreme leader with, because they had this, they had just come out with Justice League, which we're all familiar with recently with the movies, but Justice League was like, when DC first came out with Justice League, they were like on top.
Well, even in the 80s, I mean, so when did all this happen? And
this was
the 50s.
But. Yeah, this was in the late 50s, early 60s, when DC was like, you know, they were, they were on top.
In the 80s, when you and I grew up, Saturday mm-hmm. morning cartoons was the Justice League.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't remember any Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I remember Spider-Man and Friends in the 80s. I don't know if you remember that. Spider-Man and Friends with the ice. They had Iceman and Firestorm and Spider-Man. And that was that was Spider-Man and Friends in the early 80s. But you're right. I remember the Super Friends.
Hulk was on TV.
Yep.
Live action in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, which was a huge hit.
A huge success.
I think it was... Yeah, Incredible Hulk and then Dukes of Hazzard,
yep.
or either the other way around, camera, which was mm-hmm. which.
Yeah, that ran from like, didn't that run from the Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby? From 77 to like I think it was 84. I mean, it's like had like a good 7-year run, which is incredible on TV. You know,
what we're talking about, that like hit the backstory that, I love the backstory that it opened with, right? Here's this guy. He loses his family in a car wreck.
Right. Yeah.
He couldn't save them. Mm-hmm. And he's a researcher. And they do all this in like a 30-second, you know, intro thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, he interviewed these people who could lift cars off people and that they loved when they had to, and he mm-hmm. couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, they show him trying to change the car tire mm-hmm. out in the rain and all that stuff. And he gets so pissed off that he goes in his little gamma radiation lab and zaps himself. Like, you know, that it's amazing how much story they fit in that like intro section.
Yeah.
But that frustration like resonated.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's great story. That's a great backstory.
And I mean, I've used that in some of my talks, mm-hmm. you know, cause it's, there's this powerlessness that people go through life.
Yeah.
With. Whatever problem you're struggling with, mm-hmm. there's a sense of why can't I figure this out when all these other people have?
Right. Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be your golf swing.
Yeah.
It could be cooking a meal for your family. It could mm-hmm. be figuring out how to get more leads in your business. Like it doesn't matter. The frustration feels the same to everybody.
It does. It does.
So if you can have a character that went through that and went to an extreme, like ridiculous extreme to try to fix it, like you can relate to that.
Absolutely. And even after he goes to that through that extreme scenario to fix it, there's all kind of complications that come after that. Now he's got he's got a raging side that if you make him too angry, you know, that he can't control, right? I mean, he's got to always be worrying about somebody pushing him too far. You know, that whole line in the movie or in the show, like, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry. Right. I mean, it's like
30 years later, you still remember that line, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Every show. Yeah. But yeah, he's always got to deal with like somebody pushing him too far. And he's worried about that, right? Because he doesn't want to see the creature come out. He's trying to get people to stop pushing him, but they always do in every episode.
Yeah, it's kind of like, that reminds me of like Rambo when he walks into town.
Right. Yep.
The first Rambo and the cop's like, hey,
yep,
what are you doing here? You look like trouble.
Yep. Funny you mentioned that. I just heard that Quentin Tarantino is coming out with a remake of Rambo.
Wow.
Which, if you know Quentin Tarantino, his there's going to be a lot of blood.
There's going to be a lot of blood, yeah. Goodness. Did Sylvester Stallone sign off on that?
I don't know. You know, I think they're tired of making I forgot what Rambo they're at now, so I think they're just going to go remake it like they do everything else.
Maybe it'll be like the prequel where he's in Vietnam.
Yeah, it could
That'd be good.
Real quick, and I know we want to talk about some other ads, but I want to give you a quick example of how you can tie this into your copy of that fallibility. And Sean and I we've gotten a hold of a lot, and we'll probably be on some future episodes, be going through some more of these swipe files, but we got a plethora of copy.
A plethora.
Whatever it's called. Whatever. Let's see.
Pleothera.
So I'm going to share. First of all, I got to share my screen. Let's see. All right. So can you see that? Let's see. I'm going
to enhance. I can see you need to clean up your desktop. That would drive me absolutely insane.
Right. Yeah. So that's, disorganized geniuses, right? You've heard of that.
Yes. Yeah.
so you said, yeah, you're familiar with this ad, right? The amazing secret of the marketing genius who's afraid to fly. Oops. There we go.
That would be J. Abraham.
So there's an element to, there you go. All right. Creating an ad around somebody with a flaw, a character flaw in them. We've also got a friend of ours, David Dutton, who he never flies as well. So that's not too uncommon. But for the most, in this day and age, I guess it is pretty uncommon to see. And I didn't even know this until I saw this ad that J. Abraham.
Yeah, David Dutton is just weird. Yes.
I knew of two people before this ad, David Dutton and John Madden, because I knew he always took a bus.
Yeah, that's right.
But I had no idea J. Abraham was afraid to fly. But it says the headline is "The Amazing Secret of a Marketing Genius Who is Afraid to Fly." And it gets into, do your marketing efforts, obviously talking about, obviously J. Abraham. It says, however, I'm going to skip to the second paragraph because it does the introduction. It says, however, Mr. Abraham is also an absolute coward. I love that. It just calls him out as a flat coward when it comes to travel. And this is especially true when it comes to traveling on airplanes. Therefore, if you wish to do business with Mr. Abraham, you must come to him. Kind of reminds me of the Dan Kennedy. This is not because Mr. Abraham is autocratic, aloof or stubborn, something, conceited. Oh, okay. The conceited, aloof or stubborn. Quite simply, the man is afraid. He's a coward.
Yeah. That is interesting that it's, so it catches your attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Amazing secret of a marketing genius who's afraid to fly.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's curiosity provoking. There's nothing in it necessarily for me.
Yeah.
Which, everybody says, what's in it for me? Which you want some of that.
Right.
But this is more of an inquirer, or Us Weekly or whatever style ad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow. How can anybody be amazing if they're afraid to fly?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you definitely want to read it. But then it's a great reframe of somebody who has a standard of them, of you having to come to them.
Right.
So you don't feel as you don't feel like put off,
right?
Because he's afraid to fly. Like you kind of feel bad for him, which is what you've been talking about for the show. It's like it kind of endears you to the character. You're like, oh, poor guy's afraid. Well, I'm not afraid to fly, so I'll go to him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a weak, you know, there's a weak flaw in him. So he's not perfect. Hey, we know he's not perfect. He does one thing really well, obviously marketing. But in other areas of his life, he's a complete coward. So, but yeah, I mean, it does kind of endear us to someone like that, like you said, Sean, because mm-hmm. we know that he's not, he's certainly not perfect by any means.
Yeah, and it's nice too, because now you can take that flaw and you can kind of turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when you get to your call to action and it's like, well, you got to come meet this person in person. He's not going to come to you.
Right.
You already understand why.
Yep. Exactly.
So it's not a big hurdle to get over later, but you can imagine if you do this whole sales pitch about this guy who can help you save your business and every other consultant in the world comes to you.
Right.
But you got to go to him.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a big hurdle to overcome at the end of a sales letter at the call to action.
Sure. Yeah.
But because they lead with it.
Absolutely.
It's not a big deal. In fact, now it's endearing.
Right.
Right.
That's a good point. You get out your flaws initially. Right.
So this reminds me of 8 Mile with Eminem.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. He loses battle, rap battle after rap battle.
Sure.
But his final rap battle, he decides he's just going to say everything bad about himself before the other guy can.
Yeah.
So he just writes, you know, he grew up in a trailer, blah, 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 blah. And like, he just puts himself down the whole opening verse.
Sure.
And then throws it back at, was the name Rabbit? Or was he Rabbit? I can't remember. But anyway, like he throws it back at the other guy. And the guy didn't know what to do. It's like, man, that was all the stuff I was going to say.
Yeah.
Now what do I say?
Yep.
You know? I remember a coach told me that one time too, use that same example. It's like, yeah, just get your flaws out there so people know.
Absolutely. Like,
don't be afraid of it because especially today.
Yeah.
People are going to find out about your company, about your product, about your service. So if there's something in your product or service that you don't do well, like just put it out there.
Sure.
Put it right up front.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jägermeister is another example, right? I mean, they've made a whole cult following about how bad their alcohol tastes. And now it's like a challenge.
Right.
Right. Yeah. If you're in college and you go to the bar, it's like the Jägermeister challenge where can you drink this without making a face or can you, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody would drink this normally. Now it's a bestseller because they took that flaw and they made it what they lead with.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that's great. I love that. Lead with it. That's an important part of your, I think that's an important part of your copy and in the sales process is to lead with that, get it out of the way first and not wait till last.
You and I do that with our wives all the time, right? It's like, you're not going to like this.
Exactly.
This is probably a terrible idea. Right? And then you're like, okay. And they're like, oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah, right, it's like, right. Yeah. It's like, it's how you frame it, right? Exactly. Yeah.
So, well, yeah, we got a little bit of time. So let's, yeah. I was looking through, did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
Nope. Nope. That's it. That is it.
Yeah, so I was looking through these. Do you want to give a shout out to where you found all these?
Yeah, remind me because I don't have the link. Do you have the link pulled up?
I don't.
Or I can pull it up.
I don't know where the sales link is. So,
let's see.
Yeah, so we got these for the show, but so there's one of the folders that we're looking at here is like. It's all a bunch of classic ads from David Ogilvy, Gary Halbert, Eugene Schwartz, Claude Hopkins, John Carlton, Robert Collier.
Yeah. By the way, it's copylegends.com is where you'll find
copylegends.com.
it. Yeah. Copylegends.com.
Joseph Sugarman, the New Blockers dude. And we typically know one or two or maybe three ads from a lot of these guys. That are just like, you know, yeah, I know those ads, you know, for Schlitz or for whatever.
Right.
But I was just going through, like, just scanning through these before the show. I was looking at the David Ogilvy collection. And just some of the headlines, man, are just so good, and they don't really follow a lot of the formulas we've been taught.
Right. Yep.
And we don't have exact stats on, you know, this doesn't come with exact stats on all these, but, you know, these are guys who are very successful and where these types, because a lot of these are print ads.
Yeah.
Yeah. These print ads would have cost $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to run. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the publications that they were running, even back in the 60s, 70s and 80s.
Right.
So you can bet that they had a pretty good idea that these were going to work.
Yep.
But one in the David Ogilvy collection is it says every secret but one is in this book. Mm. I was like, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
You know, and it's got a picture of the book, and it says the book title is David Ogilvy Confessions of an Advertising Man. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested at all in advertising, it's weird because, right, you're actually going to read the ad for the thing that's not in the book.
Right. Absolutely.
Like, you're not even going to get the answer in the book, but you're going to read the ad because you want to know what's left out. So it's the whole FOMO way before FOMO was a thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or at least had an acronym for itself. So that was one that really caught my attention. But another thing that really caught my attention, and we mentioned this at the top of the show, was how few of these are like niches within niches within niches. And I know some people will say, well, that's because things are more competitive now.
Sure,
yeah. You got to do the niche within a niche within a niche, the sub-niche.
Right.
I'm just still not convinced.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not.
I think that, you know, the old saying, you can never be too rich, too thin, or too good looking is right. Still true. So no especially doubt. When you go into the, Gary Halpert, you know, vault,
mm-hmm.
right. Yeah. His are all like, help you look better, you know, get richer or, you know, find the love or whatever. These are emotions, and we can see this in the weight loss industry, mm-hmm. cosmetic industry. These are still super huge and super profitable niches.
Right.
And some of the best offers, like on ClickBank and some of these others, are not micro niches. They're big sure. niches.
Right.
Diabetes, mm-hmm. like all these niches that are, I mean, yes, it's a niche, but it's not as narrow as everybody makes you think you can be.
Yeah.
Because if your copy is strong, I think what they're saying, when you really got a sub niche down, the more you sub niche down, you don't have to have as good a copy,
mm-hmm.
right? You can identify a little quicker with people.
Sure.
You don't, if your offer is more dialed in, that kind of thing. But if you can write good copy and you listen to the things we talk about on the show, you can pull off a little bit bigger niche.
Yeah, no doubt.
But there's one in here that that caught my attention.
Is this another?
It was Eugene Schwartz.
Another Eugene Schwartz. Okay.
Yeah. Some of these Eugene Schwartz, I'm just going to go through some of the headlines, like the 7 deadliest crimes against yourself. Like, you could apply that to so many different niches. You could apply that to weight
that's
loss.
Really good. Yeah.
You could apply that to personal development. You could apply that to business.
Yeah.
All these.
Yeah. Like cause that's, could, I mean, that's, cause that gets, you know, it goes back to that persuasion, you know, the you, talking about the psychology of persuasion, like people, like if you name without going specific, mm-hmm. which is sometimes our tendency, but if you say 7 crimes against yourself, you can use that on so many industries, and everybody's going to apply, you know, their own, you know, you read that and basically in your, what your mind is doing automatically, whatever industry or whatever field you're in, you're automatically applying. Well, I'm thinking, how does that relate to, you know, me and my industry? I mean,
and you could definitely make the 7 bullets like industry specific, right? Like, so let's say you were weight loss, which is still pretty broad, right? When you consider 2/3 of the country is overweight, you know, and, you know, some, and like 50% obese, like it's going to hit a lot of the people.
Right.
But you could then switch it to being, you know, the 7 deadliest crimes against your lead generation.
Yeah, sure.
And the subtitle is, are you guilty of them? Then it lists mm-hmm. like 7 questions.
Sure.
So I thought that was really strong. And then there's this one I thought was funny. Like, how to defend yourself against the human parasites who want to run rule your life. Like, dang, it's a political ad right there.
Oh, yeah. So much of this is just so, you know, applies to today, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I look through these and like, how to avoid lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, there's a huge percent of the population that would love to know how to avoid lawyers.
Sure. Absolutely.
Still to this day. And I think you could say how to avoid doctors, how to avoid plumbers, how to avoid, you know, anything that would cost you money.
Yeah.
People want to know how to avoid that.
Yep. Yeah. How to avoid the tax collector.
Yeah.
It's tough. which is the IRS, right?
Yeah. These are just, as I was reading through them, I was just like, wow, these are still good. Like, this one I thought was really unique because the verb tense caught my attention. It says weird new sonic lure caught fish like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought what was interesting about that is it said caught fish.
Right.
Like crazy.
Caught, yeah.
Normally, you would see weird new sonic lure catches fish like crazy.
Yeah.
Right? You would think it'd be future, but this was a past tense. And you don't see...
That's interesting.
Like, if I think about it, I don't usually see a lot of past tense verbs in ads, headlines.
Right.
Right? But it's kind of a form of proof, right? It's like, it's already done it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. As opposed to in the middle of...
Or even future pacing, right? Because in copy and persuasion, we love future pacing. Like we love getting people to imagine what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then to go and say it's already happened.
Yeah.
Like that just really caught my attention.
Right.
So I wonder like if you have an ad that's doing some future pacing or that kind of thing. And then there's a few other ads like this, especially testimonials, right? We see testimonials that talk in the past tense sometimes. It's like, you know, teacher discovers whatever, you know, unique, whatever. But I thought that was an interesting twist to put the verb in past tense. And especially for those people who are doing advertorials.
Absolutely.
Cause that's how this one is written. If I look at it, it kind of looks like an advertorial. It's got like a byline right under that. I think the byline is the author's name, co-inventor, as told to Pausing the Weekend Fisherman.
Yeah.
So it's written as an article.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be a really different way to try an advertorial.
To
use the past tense as, you know, it's already done.
Sure.
Whatever it is you want to do.
Sure.
So that was a big one that caught my attention. These are just all like...
Yeah, there's so many good ones in that bunch.
You know how Eugene Schwartz says in Breakthrough Advertising, he talks about you do have to up the claim, and then at some point, it all comes back around.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we're not coming back around to where these more general claims could work again.
I think, there could be some truth to that. And
I know there's a quote Rich Sheffrin says all the time, and it's more of a psychology quote than it is like advertising. But he says, and I can't remember who he references, but the quote is that which is most general is most personal.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot about that. And I think that's what all these ads do really well.
Yeah.
And that's what the Stan Lee thing talks about that you were talking about, right? It's the general angst, the general pain, the general clumsiness we feel about our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is most personal to people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I actually thought the one about the one on the crime, 7 deadly crimes against yourself is actually really powerful because I think it's more powerful than 7 deadly crimes against, if I were to think about the two, seven deadly crimes against your, whatever your industry is, yourself is personal for me.
Right.
So it makes me think, you know, I'm doing something completely wrong and not something that's within my industry. So I actually, you know, some of these are, I think, more powerful, the broader, you know, the broader they are in range, and you can use them, you can apply them to any industry. But to me, yourself means I'm thinking about what I'm doing, not what my industry is doing wrong, but what I'm doing wrong. And
So I think the way you would use this, you could use the same headline and then just change the 1 through 7 bullets.
Absolutely. Like
for instance, the first bullet, just to give people perspective, says, how many times in the last 24 hours did you risk a heart attack or an ulcer simply because you didn't know a little fact about proper breathing? Mm-hmm. So you could change that to be, how many times in the last 24 hours did you risk a lawsuit something simply because you didn't know about this tax strategy?
Right.
Or this, you know, whatever business strategy.
Right.
You could do stuff like this with supplements. You could do with all kinds of things. So yeah.
Sure.
I think you're right. The headline could say exactly the same.
And you can just multi-purpose it to so many different, because everybody's going to apply their own, like I said, I mean, they're going to take that and say, whatever industry they're in, they're going to say, you know, the brain automatically says, crimes, whoa, okay, what am I doing in my industry that's that's in a violation or that's a major detriment to my company or you know, how I'm growing my business? Or even, I mean, even if it's not business related, in my health, right? I mean, what am I doing to kill myself? You know, what are the things that are killing me every day?
And by the way, I'm going to say something that's a little controversial here.
Do it.
But just so you guys know, because we hear this a lot, right? We hear like, you know, don't copy, like, you know, use it as inspiration, like all this other stuff. Fact is, headlines are not copyrightable.
Yeah. Right.
They're just not. Book titles are not copyrightable. Like anything you use for advertising, but book titles I don't think are copyrightable. You could have styling can be trademarked, but a headline cannot be copyrighted.
Yeah.
So you can take some of these old headlines and use them word for word.
Absolutely.
You do not have to change them.
Nope.
And some people are like, well, that's unethical. That's whatever. It's like, I don't think.
That's why they call it a swipe file. They didn't call it a swipe file for nothing, right?
I don't think any of these dead people are going to come back on you and
exactly.
do anything.
Right.
You know, I think where the creativity comes in is how you're going to apply it to your product later in the copy. But for the headline itself, I would steal liberally in these things, like, you know.
And if you're worried about that, you can still take some of these old headlines and run them through something like, and we'll talk about this maybe in another episode because we're short on time. We got to run here in a second, but. I did at this trade show that I was at a couple of days, we had breakouts and I actually did a breakout on conversion.ai because I've been playing around with that. So I did a breakout session for people in a room on how they can use, you know, artificial intelligence in their copy, in their, some of their marketing copy. So, and like I said, we'll get into that in another episode, but you could take some of these old headlines and run them through AI, right? If you don't want it to read exactly, and come up with some new ideas. But those are just some things. These are all reference and meant for you to be able to get the creative juices flowing. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking them and just using them.
Yeah. I mean, I won't name any names, but I know there's a swipe file in this collection that a very successful copywriter used almost word for the entire ad, almost word for word.
Right.
20, 30 years after the original was written, and it worked like gangbusters.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to say who it was and what it was, but it, you know.
Hey.
So, but like here's, I'm just scrolling through these. $100,000, $100 million wasted on ads that never pay.
Yeah.
I mean, that would work for any marketing, that would work for any company that does advertising, that you want to get their attention. You know, So here's one you wouldn't use today to advertisers who want the ableist help. Like, you wouldn't use the word ableist anymore.
No.
Nobody would use that word anymore. But to advertisers who want the, you know, whatever help, best help, most amazing help, or whatever the whatever ableist would be today, which would be like most effective, most efficient, mm-hmm. like whatever would be that. Sometimes you might need to update for time.
Sure.
You know, especially on some of these, especially when you get into like Claude Hopkins and some of the older ones.
Yeah.
Where the language has changed.
Right.
But yeah, these are just all good.
Yeah. Copylegends.com. We'll post a link to it on the show page and people can check it out. It's worth, I mean, obviously you're spending money. I mean, this isn't a download for free. You're going to spend some money, but to me, it's worth it. I mean, it's worth every penny because it's a great reference. If you're a copywriter.
Yeah. And I think if you just sat down, even if you're not like a copywriter, but you write your copy for your business, mm-hmm. like if you were to just sit down with the legal pad, mm-hmm. open this file,
yes,
and just see what gets inspired from these, mm-hmm. and then use some of them word for word if you need to, you know, change, you know, dollar amounts if needed, you know, all those kind of things. You can, if you will sit down and just turn off everything, grab a beverage mm-hmm. of your choice, and just go through these with a notepad.
Yeah,
you will come out.
Sit down with your remarkable, like we've talked about, right? Remarkable
tablet.
Yeah,
just absolutely.
Pull these up. You know, at some point, I'm going to actually print the. I've already planned it. I just haven't gotten around to it, but I'm going to sit down and print every one of these out, put them and tab them into a big three ring binder at some point to just be able to go through those as a reference. Cause I just love, you and I are both the same. We love just having that paper to be able to just, you know, scroll
and
through
this. And I can tell you, like, I've used some of these, you know, the old, they laughed when I sat down. I use that.
No doubt.
You know, in the granite business, 4 or 5 years ago, it did great. Mm-hmm. And we should do a side by side on that. I don't know.
We should.
I don't know if we ever did that, or if we did, we can do it again.
Absolutely.
But what's funny in this collection, there's other versions of that ad that you don't see mm-hmm. as often.
No, exactly.
Right? I smiled when the butler spoke to Donovan in French, but I gasped with surprise at my friend's reply. They grinned when the waiter spoke to me in French, but their laughter changed to amazement at my reply. You know, there's two different versions of the same ad there that you could take a look at. So,
yeah, we'll have to get into those, some of those in an upcoming episode. But yeah, man, good show. We'll definitely, as I mentioned, we'll put a link to, again, copylegends.com, where you can check that out. Sean, send me the link to your, I love the fact, I mean, your sound's been great on your iPad. So send me the link to some of the setup you got there for our listeners on, how you're making that work, and, we'll be putting that out. But, to all of our listeners, hope you all have a great week ahead. You can find us on persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, everything, you name it. Sean, it's been fun, man.
Disney Plus, wherever.
Enjoy the time in Pennsylvania. You'll be back next week in Texas, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be back.
All right, man. Well, have a good one. And to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Take care. Have a great week.
See ya.